Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham flick, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. I'm your host, Greg, and I am joined by our entire crew tonight, back for some exciting Swansea and Barnsley talk, you know, with boring games like Borussia Dortmund in the Champions League out of the way. They felt like it was time to put the band back together. Also, maybe a hurricane not blowing through the United States had a little something to do with it as well. Leading us off, we have straight from Atlanta and straight from his bat farm, we have my sidekick, Ben Daniels. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I'm on the porch tonight, and three bats have taken up residence on top of my porch. So hopefully they don't decide to maul me when it gets a little darker.
Is this more likely to be a Valencia fandom thing, or did your father get killed and you're looking to avenge him? How do you see this going?
You know, I haven't heard about my parents getting gunned down by rampant criminals in the city of Gotham, but if it's happened, I think that's where we're headed.
Maybe your parents got killed by a team that is a rival with Valencia, who I cannot find very quickly. So let's just assume I said the right team.
This is a very good bit.
No. I think we should keep this one going. Keep going.
No.
Villarreal, maybe.
Yeah, sure. Why
they both
not
start with V?
Yeah, why not?
Mix them up.
Maybe Real Sociedad. I don't know. That seems like a team that would have a fierce rivalry with Valencia. So yes, I look forward to Ben taking revenge on his Sociedad. Enemies for life while dressed like
I'm glad we're establishing our world football bona fides up front.
Exactly.
Everybody knows how much
exactly
they can trust
you're
us.
Right, you're
in
right.
Our opinions.
If we were English or European, you know, we would know who Valencia's natural rival is by heart, I'm sure. Next up.
Why is it so hard to find on the internet?
I know, right? I was just thinking, Ben, keep talking. I'm going to find it very quickly. No, I wasn't. Next up,
I mean, if Valencia has a rival, it's probably us for taking Roberto Soldado from them.
That's I'm sure how they feel about how that all went down.
They harbor a grudge.
Yeah, okay.
They'll never let it go.
So Levante is also in Valencia.
Yes, so Ben's like
Villarreal and Levante.
Oh, so we were right. Nailed it. So Ben, when you go and get revenge against the Yellow Submarine for killing your parents, you'll know what to wear, and I'm glad. I'm happy about this. I'm very happy about this. Next up, who I'm sure is also planning some form of vengeance, we have our evil numbers wizard, Michael Cayley. Michael, welcome back.
Thanks. Good to be back.
Who has wronged your family since our last podcast?
Who has wronged my family? Well, this is we went to the park today with Sam. I had a He's been in school 2 days a week in a row, so I was like missing parenting time. And he was playing with some other children, and then he comes over to me and he says, and I was like, "Oh, Sam, why don't you play with me?" He said, "Daddy, they don't want to play with me." And I could have murdered those children. But then I just told Sam that they probably did, and he went back and played with them. So I went with my second instinct, which was correct. And he had a great time.
Not the strongest foundation I've ever heard for a blood feud, but, you know, I'm confident you can get there, Michael.
I sort of chose against the blood feud. I didn't answer your question, which is one of my things.
Guys, this is a good return to form. I very, very much appreciate your commitment to bits.
The longest already running bit on Wheeler Dealer Radio. Greg asks a question, Michael does whatever else he wants.
we're very committed to all of our bits here on Wheeler Dealer Radio. And finally, our other hurricane refugee, we have Brian Ashlock. We could actually say your last name now, Brian.
Hey.
Yeah. How are you doing now that you're back in your home in Florida? And have you started any blood feuds with any of your neighbors since your return home?
No, I think I've decided to have a blood feud with my own blood. I am very much
I spent the hurricane hold up with my parents. Love you, Mom and Dad. I'm sure you're listening. I don't want to go back. So, yeah, that was too much family time for me. So I'm happy to be in my own home and in peace and quiet.
It's very Greek of you. Well, fortunately, you guys came back to discuss just a barn burner of a game, or two games, one of which the only way we could see it was listening to it on the radio. So it's a real fun set of topics to talk about today. Leading us off, we have a thrilling 0-0 draw to Swansea at Wembley. This game was both horrible and not as horrible as we anticipated. Michael, we watched this together. Obviously this was terrible, but this didn't set alarm bells off for you, did it?
Not really. There's things to worry about with this team, but like, you know, Kane had a chance. The Swansea were, you know, completely stifled. Our midfield did a very good job of sort of stopping things quickly. And it's the sort of game that in a lot of other situations we win. I think that one reason people get getting worried about it is because we also drew with Burnley in a game that we were clearly better. And so it's hard for me to draw like that many conclusions from Spurs basically stifling their opponents and then not getting a goal or two that they probably should have. These weren't the best games. The Swansea match, we were mostly pretty toothless. There are questions you can ask about the way that we set up, but it looks like the same team I thought we were. We had a bunch of games like this last year. One thing I feel is that people don't remember that Spurs didn't start hot either of the last two seasons and had games like this. And then so because we had like hot runs down the stretch, you think that, oh, good Spurs never have games like this. And we did. We drew a whole bunch of games last year. This is kind of what it looked like when we did that. It's kind of the same team doing the same kind of things we did.
On some level, though, if this is like bad Spurs, like Kane hit the crossbar, created one or two other decent chances, had two penalty shouts, one of which I think was like not as borderline as the other, and was pretty, you know, I think we can feel reasonably aggrieved that it wasn't given. I mean, this is, in the grand scheme of boring, frustrating Spurs matches we've watched, it wasn't that bad. I mean, look at the Burnley match you mentioned, Michael. That was, I mean, we were on top. We were probably, our heights in that match were probably higher than our heights in the Swansea match. But at the same time, we were conceding a ton of chances, or at least getting cut open down the break at the end of that match. Like, I don't think Swansea put I don't think I was ever terribly worried Swansea were going to score, other than maybe a corner.
Right, a couple of set pieces, that was it.
Yeah, and they didn't really put anything dangerous on target, so it's, I mean, it was just, I don't know. Brian, do you think it's reasonable to chalk this up to just Spurs ran their asses off against Dortmund and then had a bad day at the office, or is that letting them off the hook?
Yes, I don't, I mean, look, I think Michael's right in that this is very much like this is kind of par for the course for a Pochettino team early in the season. But it's hard to feel like that we shouldn't have gotten something out of this game. You know, we were the better team for almost all of it. Like you guys said, the Swansea didn't really do anything. They were mostly stifled. We were basically camped in there in our attacking third for the entire match, and to not challenge Fabianski more than we did, and then to also not create anything off of the number of set pieces that we had, it wasn't a super coherent attacking performance from us.
And yet we still manufactured some stuff, but
I mean, yeah, we still had like 25, 26 shots.
Not the best quality shots.
No, but Heung-Min Son did a lot of good things. You know, the Harry Kane had a good chance. I think my real problem with it was that when it wasn't working, we didn't really have anything different to try. And, you know, Pochettino waits as he always does, he waits so long to make substitutions, and because he has faith that his plan A is going to work, and we just couldn't batter down the door. And then by the time we did try to make changes, we were, you know, bringing on Musa Sissoko, or well, Sissoko was on the field already, Aurier. So we were bringing on Aurier, which was fine. It added some more width, added some more pace outside, but I mean, against a bunker defense, maybe Trippier wasn't like the worst thing to have out there. But yeah, I don't know. Fernando Llorente came on, he didn't do anything, so I don't know. It wasn't great.
Ben, is
I mean, just to follow up on that, I think that one of the thing that, like, again, this isn't something new. This is the thing that we knew to be worried about before this game.
Sure.
Is what Brian says, that when we need to do something more in the attack, we go to our bench, we have nothing. We have Fernando Llorente, who is old and may do better than he's done so far, but has not been impressive. And we have no one else, because we didn't buy an attacking midfielder for a team that barely has any attacking midfielders. And so there just isn't that much this team can do when they need more attack off the bench. And it's a weakness that we clearly had from the start. It's a weakness that we're going to have, you know, until we buy somebody in midseason or Eric Lamella comes back. In any case, it was a failure in the transfer market that you could see very clearly, I think, this weekend.
Well, but the thing is like, there are things that we could theoretically do with the bench players that we have, but Pochettino stubbornly chooses to not do them. You know, like I'm not saying that bringing on Nkudu was the right option for this match, but he's an attacking midfielder that exists. You know, you have...
he's also coming back from an injury. I mean, the problem with so many of these bench guys, and I think this goes to what Michael was saying, is that, you know, so many of our bench guys are hurt right now, and given mm-hmm. that, we probably should have bought some, because it might have been entirely reasonable with, you don't either want to risk Nkudu against this level of opposition with what his health is, or just you don't want to risk him at all, given where his health was on Saturday, and same with a guy like Harry Winks. You know, it's just... That's why we needed to buy more players, we don't know if Nkudu was even an option, which is the frustrating thing.
Sure, and you know, and I mean, you know, Marcus Edwards is maybe not still fully fit. He's not even involved.
Or even
against Barnsley.
I mean, do you want him in on a Premier League game that you're trying to win? Like, I mean, in the balance.
We let Sissoko play all the time, so you know, whatever. you know, I mean, it's just like I feel like there are things that if you have kind of a lack of depth, like it seems Spurs do right now, then there you could be doing more interesting things with your bench than simply just having, you know, two fullbacks, a couple center backs, and, you know, Harry Winks on the bench. Like, there should be something else that we could be doing with this. And for all of the talk of we develop youth and everything and we give people opportunities, like Swansea at home would have been a cool opportunity to have a young attacking midfielder on the bench that we could have thrown on. And we just, you know, we put on Sissoko and whatever.
Yeah, so... I mean, I guess I share that same frustration that you guys are talking about. It's like Michael said, it's nothing new. It's nothing unexpected. You know, we've done this the past 2 years, but it's still frustrating. You know, you have a guy like Aurier, who's much better than Kieran Trippier, who, you know, is still getting up to speed and you know, maybe not fully fit or not fully acclimated. And it's like, you know, you get that business done earlier in the window, and you have a real right back for the whole match. You know, we have Harry Winks as our fourth center midfielder, but we know he's coming back from an injury and isn't ready. And so rather than address that, we rely on Musa Sissoko, who we all know isn't good. You know, we could have bought an attacking midfielder.
He has been almost a little not terrible this year, so.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, it's like, it's funny because playing him in central midfield was kind of like what we all hoped was like going to be the purpose of him was being Dembele's backup, because it's the only thing that he's like marginally qualified to do. And after a year of seeing him suck at right wing, I guess it is a positive development that we're actually seeing him in a position that he can function in. So I guess I shouldn't be too down about that. That is a nice development. But still, it's like, we know what the weaknesses are in the squad. We know we start slowly, you know, like these were solvable problems this summer and we didn't solve them. And now we're just kind of going through the growing pains that, you know, are a logical conclusion from what happened over the summer. It's not unexpected. It's just frustrating.
My thing was, is Pochettino did some kind of weird tactical stuff in this match that I don't think he really necessarily had to do. And I don't know if he felt like he had to just because of, you know, the Dortmund match and how much everybody had run during that, or why, but like, you know, we started the game with Heung-min Son as a left wing back. And then by the middle of the second, by the start of the second half, Kieran Trippier was left wing back. And Moussa Sissoko, I guess, was nominally the right wing back.
Yep.
It was just like, he overcomplicated it. And, you know, I don't know if it's just his thing about how he doesn't like his fullbacks playing, you know, 180 minutes in a week. I don't see why he wouldn't have chosen to do some of this rotation against Barnsley as opposed to against an actual Premier League team. But we did some really weird stuff that mostly worked, but he enforced this rotation on the team that I didn't think really needed to happen.
Yeah, it's a little frustrating because like that was a game we could have seen Kyle Walker-Peters come out and play wing back, but because Pochettino knew he was going to start and play against Barnsley, that wasn't an option, and it maybe should have been. And I guess you mentioned the substitution or the decision in the second half to move Sissoko to right wing back and Trippier to left wing back, and it's like, if you have to fuck up one of your fullback positions to get a guy like Sissoko in there, like, I don't know why you screw with both of them. Like, make Sissoko play left wing back and let Trippier stay on the right. You know, Sissoko at left wing back isn't going to be markedly worse than he is at right wing back. But when you have a guy like Trippier, whose real only value is he can put in crosses, moving him to the left side where it's much harder to cross on his right foot, it's just like you're just neutering him for no reason to get marginal additional value out of Moussa Sissoko, who has little value to begin with.
Right.
That was a really weird tactical move.
Yeah, and I mean, because Trippier's advantage to, especially against a bunker defense, is he's putting in those crosses early, and he's crossing from high and wide on the right-hand side. If you push him over on the left-hand side, the only way he's getting to use his right foot on these crosses is if he's dribbling down closer towards the byline on his left foot and then cutting back onto his right to come back towards the halfway line, which is then forcing him to curve balls in at such a weird angle.
Right, and it's expecting him to dribble to the byline, which we know he can't.
It's expecting him to dribble past somebody or towards somebody in any way, shape, or form. And it was just so, so weird because,
I mean, because we've seen Pochettino do something like this before. When he plays these really bad teams and he's trying to do rotational stuff, I mean, he tries to get away with shit. And like, okay, I can stuff Sissoko on the right as a wing back because they're not going to really test us that much. And that lets me get another attacking player in there and I don't have to use another fullback. I mean, he's done this before. Like, and it's probably one of his weakest points as a manager when he just tries to get away with stuff. And it's like, well, I've got Harry Kane up top and we got Son in there. One of them will score a goal and then we won't really have to worry about this. And it's just going to work itself out. And, you know, I mean, it almost worked, but it didn't.
I guess my point is just he could have gotten away with something with the same personnel and maximized his lineup enough better that it might have made the difference. I don't know. So that's frustrating to me. And then the other thing is as Michael said, is like, you know, we started slow the last 2 years and we still had good seasons. And, you know, this isn't necessarily, you know, the death of our season because we drew against Swansea. Obviously not. But, you know, the last two seasons we fell short specifically because of games dropped like this early on. Had we started better, more consistently, you know, we might have been in with a shot at the title either of the last 2 years. And so it's frustrating, especially now this season when, you know, we aren't fortunate enough to have all the other good teams be terrible. This year, the Manchester clubs both look very good. You know, Chelsea still looks good. So that's three teams now who are probably going to finish in the top four, and that leaves us competing with Liverpool and Arsenal and no, just kidding, not Everton. But Liverpool and Arsenal.
Probably not Arsenal either, really. So
maybe not. I mean, I don't know. Like, they have gotten better in the past couple of weeks since being forced to sell Oxlade-Chamberlain and not sell Mustafi. Arsene's been kind of forced to play his best team, and lo and behold, it's working out better.
Who could forget that memorable night against Cologne?
Yeah. But so, you know, the point is like we have a smaller margin for error here than we have the past two seasons because we can't count on everybody else being terrible, which, you know, we kind of suspected. And so, you know, I guess it depends on what our expectations are for the season. If we expected that we were going to fight for the top four, then we're pretty much on course for that. If we deluded ourselves into thinking like a title challenge was real again this year, games like this is what makes that less and less possible. So, I don't know. I didn't believe we had it in us for a title this year because everybody else looked like they strengthened really well and we didn't. But even though I suspected like top four was the best we could hope for, it's still kind of a bummer to, you know, see us now five games into the season and behind Newcastle in the table.
Ben, one thing Brian mentioned, sort of alluded to earlier, was, you know, like, why not use Marcus Edwards in a game like this? And that's the kind of sentiment I think all of us at some point in time have expressed, either on here, in the writer's room, on Twitter, or whatever. I think probably just as many times we've kind of shat on those sentiments for certain youth players. Where is the line when you look at, like, okay, Spurs have a lot of injuries, we didn't strengthen as much as we should have this summer, we need to rotate. When you're looking at a match like this, let's say Swansea, because obviously you don't want to put in younger, less experienced players against teams like City, if you can help it. But like in a match like this, like where's the line between sort of like a reasonable decision from a coach and, you know, like people playing Football Manager in their heads? Because, you know, I think Kyle Walker-Peters to me is the sort of end where it's like, that's probably a reasonable ask. And Marcus Edwards is sort of like, no, don't put him on unless we're seeing the game out because, you know, we have no clue. Like, he's so young. I mean, where do you see the line between sort of reality and fantasy there?
So I think it's hard, especially with a guy like a Marcus Edwards, who we really haven't seen play against adults. You know, I think it's easy to say, you know, Pochettino sees him in training. He knows what he's capable of. Trust him to make that decision of when Marcus Edwards is ready. And if he's not ready, he's not ready. But the flip side is our bench isn't good. And like the guys we're bringing on to change games aren't really capable of doing that. So, you know, even if Marcus Edwards isn't ready to go, you know, start a match in the Premier League, I have a hard time seeing that he would be less effective in a 10-minute cameo in a game we're dominating, where we need something different to come off the bench. And we just don't have that among our senior players. I think, personally, Pochettino could be a little more aggressive with some of these players and allow them to have that moment and see what they're capable of. Because, you know, we're never going to know how good Marcus Edwards really is against adults until he plays against adults. And, you know, I broadly, he's young, taking it slow. Like, that all makes sense. But I think there are certainly situations, and this is one of them, where we can find a spot for him on the bench. And if, you know, if we're in a comfortable position where we can give it a shot, like, I'd like to see us give it a shot. You know, going back to Harry Kane's first big year under Pochettino, you know, we saw him killing it in the Europa League every week, and Pochettino still wasn't trusting him to go out there in the Premier League. And when he finally did, lo and behold, he's Harry Kane, and we've all seen how that story ends.
But we don't even have these guys doing it in the Europa League or the... I mean, it's early in the year, so it's, you know...
No, and without the Europa League, it's like we've lost that kind of proving ground.
There's always the League Cup, then. Unfortunate.
Yeah, and again, you know, he didn't try him in the League Cup. I don't know. I personally think throwing guys in the deep end is acceptable and, you know, can bring out the best in people and can reveal something that you're just not going to see in training. But, you know, again, I guess I defer to Poch here, but I don't know. I would like to play a little more Football Manager with the team.
I mean, certainly you look at, like, to me, the big flaw, like, someone like Marcus Edwards is so young that I am going to defer to the manager there. If he doesn't think he's ready at, like, I mean, how old is he, 18? I mean, he's really young. Like, I'm willing to defer. But, like, where it gets me a little bit is you look at our fullback situation, our left-back situation right now, and that's, for all the problems we had about not strengthening over the summer, that's something that's just, like, bad luck on the club's part. And, you know, like, Danny Rose is still hurt. It is what it is. You don't go buy, like, another left-back for that. But this is what Kyle Walker-Peters is there for. If we're willing to play him at left-back, which we clearly are, like, take a shot on him there so we have a more of a functional team, especially for a guy who likes to get up the field. I mean, I've seen nothing about Kyle Walker-Peters in any of his performances this year that wouldn't, I mean, which is admittedly, like, two plus some preseason matches, but, like, that wouldn't make me want to, like, at least try my luck with him against that Swansea team. And that's where I would have liked to see some more chances taken.
To me, it's just such a weird bench. Like, it's the bench we had on against Swansea, it's two fullbacks in Aurier and Davis. You've got a center back who yet to play for the club in Foyth. And then you've got Dembele and Winks, who are not attacking midfielders, and Llorente. And so... Where in those seven guys is there something different? And I mean, look, Dembele's great, and
he's an attacking midfielder. I mean,
he's not an attacking midfielder in the way that you know, Heung-min Son is off the bench, or if you have Eric Lamela on the bench, or even Nkudu or Edwards, or if Josh Onomo is still around, or you know, whoever. He's not attacking.
He's not the guy who's going to unlock a defense. He's not a guy who's going to, you know, pick apart a bunkered Swansea team.
And he's not going to score a goal. So, I mean, you know, it's just weird. Like, to me, like, that's the kind of situation where, you know, either pick one of Davies or Foyth. You know, like, you didn't need all three of those defenders, or pick one of Dembele or Winks, and bring in another attacking midfielder. Bring someone with a little flair. Bring someone that, like Ben said, can unlock a defense. Even if it's, you know, not Marcus Edwards, but somebody else in the academy team, you know, whoever. But, like, have that option available to you. And the fact that we don't have that option available to us with a senior player is, like Michael said earlier, that's a failure of how we conducted our business in the transfer window. But by the same time, you have to be prepared for every eventuality, and you knew Swansea was going to sit back, you knew they were going to defend, and so you have to be ready to have a game changer or somebody who you can at least say, all right, well, go try something for 10, 15 minutes and see what happens. And so... I'm with Ben. I think we should play a little more Football Manager with the bench.
So
I mean, my feeling would be that, like, if Pochettino doesn't think these guys are ready, that's fine. I don't have any problem with that. But if Pochettino didn't think those guys were ready, we should have bought players who were ready, who we could sub in instead of them. You can pick one. And we did neither.
And I wonder if that's partially because of the injury situation, where Spurs are thinking, you know, all right, Nkudu will be healthy. He winds up getting hurt at the end of the transfer window. Or they're thinking, you know, all right, yeah, well, in November, December, we'll have Eric Lamela back, so it doesn't really make any sense to buy somebody for now. And but what's happened is it's kind of screwed us over now. And, you know, one more body in attacking midfield probably wasn't going to, you know, break the wage bill or send us into some sort of, you know, dressing room catastrophe. So, I have to believe that if there's a reason that if we didn't buy, it has to be because of the injuries and we believe people are coming back.
It's a big bet to take.
Or we're dumb and bad. That's the other
option. Yeah, I mean, clearly. Let's not to harp on negatives because I think that's where this is going, but let's change the age range we're looking at here. Michael, what are your opinions of Fernando Llorente now that we've seen him in a sub in one match and I guess heard, but he played a match that we did not really get to see later in the week. What are your first impressions of him?
I'm worried. You know, he played, it was a short period of time in which our attack was not functioning very well. He did almost nothing.
I think it's important to emphasize.
He did the knockdown header to Aurier that could have been a penalty.
I think it's important to note that I mean, that attack was breaking down before he came on, but he didn't do a lot to get it back on track.
Yeah. He fit right in an attack that wasn't working.
Yes. Yes.
And so that's not that many minutes. I didn't watch the Barnsley game because no one who wasn't at the match didn't watch the Barnsley game. So I don't have that much to say about that. I would say that, like, we bought a player whose legs have clearly been going, who has been putting up pretty good sub numbers and not particularly good starting numbers for a couple years, who very easily could hit the wall at any moment, and I'm certainly concerned that he has. It's way too early to say that he has, but this was the sort of game where I kind of expected that he would at least get his head onto a shot in the time that we had. So it's not the best.
There was a corner at one point, and he was not close to the scrum. And I was just amused by how, like, he really did try to barge over about, like, five players to get to the ball. But I don't know. I think it's too early to judge him, and especially, like, you know, I mean, rounding into shape, rounding into sort of getting used to how the team plays. The team, frankly, does need to adjust to him a little bit. I hope that, you know, the idea we all sort of had before the season started of, like, or before the transfer window ended of him, you know, just being a different look will eventually sort of materialize, but we really didn't see it on Saturday, and I think we were all hoping that that would become a little more tangible.
I think he's cooked.
Okay, well.
I'm sorry. Like, I think.
I mean, we all thought that before he came to the Premier League, and it's not like he wasn't a productive sub in England. Like, I just think that's, you know.
But I mean, he really, like, he overperformed drastically last season. You know, he had the best set piece taker in the league, dropping balls on his head. He scored a lot of goals from corners and set pieces. He's clearly unsuited to a pressing system where he has to run around a lot and, like, be active. Kind of the only thing he gives you is, like, that short burst movement and an aerial threat. And it's just like, is that enough for your second striker? I don't think so. And then when we're having him start games like the Barnsley game where, you know, we have to rest Kane because, obviously, and he doesn't necessarily seem suited for running around for 90 minutes, even against Barnsley. It's like, you know, as a 10-minute sub, and you hope he gets his head on something, like, it's fine. But we've already, in two games, seemed to have depended on him more than that. And I just don't know that he's suited to give us more than that. So I'm worried.
I just think it's such a weird departure from what we saw from our second striker last year, where, You know, Llorente comes on against Swansea and he touches the ball 5-6 times, completes one pass, and, you know, I always felt that, you know, if nothing else, Janssen was a busy player.
Janssen was wasteful in other ways. I mean.
Yeah, he was profligate with his finishing, but if you knocked a ball up to him, he held on to it and drew a foul, you know, at least some of the time. Janssen is admittedly like a decade younger and, you know, was used to running some. So, you know,
I mean, the hold-up play was not thick. You know, I mean, I think we can all agree about that, about Llorente, which was concerning. But, you know, it was never going to be what Thick Vin gave us. So that's disappointing. But I don't know. I think we're all worried given what Bielsa did to him all those years ago and how old he is now. But I don't know. Hopefully we'll see more out of him. But not a great start to his Spurs career. Let's talk about something very briefly. Ben, what were your impressions? You listened to the whole Barnsley game on the radio, and you watched a few highlights online. What did you think of Foyth for whatever you can draw out of that experience?
It seemed like he had a couple positional deficiencies where he kind of got sucked out a little bit and then got burned on the turn. I think there was like two chances where he got beat. But other than that, it sounds like he was pretty well composed. I saw some highlights of him on the ball and he was dribbling guys and taking it out of defense and contributing to attack. And so in that respect, he looks very much like a Pochettino kind of center back, a guy who's comfortable on the ball, who can contribute to, you know, to our attack, pass out of the back, dribble through the midfield line and create space. You know, I'm sure he's got some getting up to speed to do in terms of defending and dealing with the speed and, you know, technique of the Premier League. But by all accounts, it was a pretty good first performance. And it certainly didn't sound like the Cameron Carter-Vickers performances we saw last year, where he just looked, you know, totally outmatched. So, yeah, I think the future augurs well.
It seemed to be in line with what you would hope to, you know, see given everything we heard about him. Like, good technical skill, probably needs to work a little bit on his, you know, sort of positioning and, you know, being synced up with the team. But, you know, not bad for, you know, a teenager.
Can I go back real quick?
Sure.
Just speaking of new center backs, I just don't know. We've given him a lot of time. Davinson Sanchez, I have been very impressed with. Again, he had a few hiccups early on, but he looks very comfortable in this team, very good on the ball, very quick, very good one-on-one defender. I personally was expecting him to have a lot more growing pains than this, but I'm pretty pleased.
Ryan made a good point last week, and I think he said it to us on other occasions as well, but you know, this is a kid who every year of his professional career, which is two, has been asked to do a lot more than anyone expected, and he stepped up in a really big way. You know, he was not expected to do much for that Nacional team, and he was their starting center back all the way to the Copa Libertadores victory. He was not expected to do a whole lot for Ajax last year, and he was a starting center back all the way to the Europa League final, and almost winning a Eredivisie title. I mean, this is a guy who sort of exceeded expectations at every step so far in his career. He might just be a gamer. I mean, it's encouraging to see. Again, small sample size, but he's certainly, I mean, you can see why Spurs were willing to spend so much on him, I think.
I'm less sold on him right now. So, to be clear, it is not clear to me that his defensive positioning is very good. A number of different plays, you can watch him get the wrong side of the ball, get the wrong side of the move. And we haven't seen him try to pass forward very much. His passing maps, there's a lot of side-to-side in them. What strikes me is that what we're doing, which I think is really good, is taking a guy who's somewhat limited. I think there's passing skill there, but he gave the ball away a ton for Ajax, and I think it sort of got in his head that he should be worried about that, which he should. And a guy who is, you know, learning to read games and defend, and put him in a position where with Alderweireld and Vertonghen beside him, he's got two very good passers beside him, one great one, one good one. He's got two guys who read the game extremely well beside him. And so what we can do is maximize what he does well, which is defend a player one-on-one and win the ball. And so he ends up running out to do that, or he's sweeping up behind, and he's doing the things that he does well. I think we shouldn't overstate the – I think that what we're seeing in his quality right now is Pochettino putting him in a position to succeed, much more than him being some world-beating center back.
I think it's especially interesting that we chose to put him in the center of the back three as the deepest lying player. I really thought when he came in that he was going to
be a right back.
Play the right center back role that Eric Dier had played last year, and Toby Alderweireld would continue to be at the center of the back three, and it would just look basically the same, and you would have Sanchez, you know, stepping up in the defensive line as sort of a stopper and you know, covering in behind the right wing back. And really what's happened instead is the fact that Sanchez is such a good defender one-on-one and is very pacey and maybe doesn't read the game as well, but his quickness in the center has allowed basically Alderweireld and Vertonghen to do whatever they want, and Jan Vertonghen is basically another midfielder at this point. And it's been an interesting change, and it's fun, and I kind of like it. And I mean, you know, for a lot of the Swansea match, he was the only defender even anywhere near the halfway line, and it was just him and Tammy Abraham standing, you know, behind all the action while Jan Vertonghen and Alderweireld were camped out about 30 yards from the Swansea goal. It's interesting what it's allowed us to do, and it's not at all what I expected. So
I thought that was one of the more interesting, not that there was a lot interesting about the Swansea-Spurs match, but one of the more interesting things was the Tammy Abraham, Davinson Sanchez sort of matchup, and then you had these two clearly very raw, talented players sort of going up against each other. I thought Abraham looked a little more seasoned than Sanchez, but it was very cool to watch these guys sort of go at it all match, trying to get the best of each other, but... I don't know. I like Sanchez. I'm starting to see why we spend so much on him, and I can see where they see him long term in this team. And it's encouraging.
Yeah. I think he has the physical tools and the technical tools to get better. And obviously, playing with, you know, Vertonghen and Alderweireld, you know, he really couldn't be learning from better center backs. I really like the way it frees up Toby to contribute more to the attack, because, you know, I think his passing from deep is obviously very good, but if you get him on the ball and letting him take it a little further forward, especially given our kind of lack of creativity in midfield, allowing, you know, him and Jan to pull strings like that, I think is a really interesting development that I think could be good for us.
It's funny you say physicality, Ben, because I think that he is very impressive physically, but I think a lot of Spurs fans, there seems to be a conception I'm seeing, and, I mean, tell me if I'm the only one who's seeing this, but among Spurs fans on Twitter, that he's like, you know, like beast is a word I keep seeing get thrown around. I think there's this perception he's like Wanyama or something, and I'm not going to, like, I mean, we can guess why that is, but, I mean, the physicality that I've seen that's so impressive, not that he can't, you know, get in there and defend some plays, but he is fast. I mean, he is really fast, and
is definitely more what I meant. Was his speed is very nice addition to the back line.
He was hanging with Aubameyang.
I mean, Walker and Rose, and
yeah, I mean, it's. I mean, I think that might be the big reason he's in the middle, is that they can send him up and back very quickly, and it's very impressive to watch.
Signing, guys.
Yeah, let's sign more guys like him. We're good at signing center backs, and apparently nothing else.
We should spend $40 million or £40 million on more players, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that would help.
Musa Sissoko.
Yeah, just Musa Sissoko. We said 40, not 30. Let's not get carried away. So we play West Ham this coming weekend on Saturday at, I guess, London Stadium is what they're calling it now. Michael, how are you feeling about rolling into this game? You think we have a chance to send Slaven Bilic to the unemployment line, or you think they're going to get the better of us?
We're a better team than they are, West Ham have been playing Obiang in midfield, which has made them somewhat less ridiculous, but I don't think that they are anything we should worry about. I'm a little confused how we're going to rotate for this game, because we've got to, I assume we're going to, you know, obviously Kane's going to start and Eriksen's going to start. I don't know what the fullback rotation is going to look like. Like, are we going to play Davis for two matches? Are we going to play... is now Aurier playing the league and Trippier playing the Champions League? And those things matter a lot, as we've seen in our last few matches, exactly how coherent the rotated team is going to be.
Well, and with Apoel coming up. But Apoel's coming up, too. And I know that game's important, and we'll get to that in a second. But because it's a Cypriot team, we're playing in the Champions League on Wednesday, or in midweek. You know, like, Poch might take risks with rotation that he might not if we were playing, you know, Real or Dortmund on...
And I would assume that he's going to want to try to win the West Ham game. I don't know.
It's a weird dilemma.
Be nice to have more depth. I don't know.
Yeah, we should try it out. But we got a bunch of guys. It's going to be like a lot of new signings at mid-season, guys. It's going to be great.
The thing that scares me about rotating heavily for Apoel is that, like, in order for us to advance out of this group, we absolutely have to beat Apoel twice.
Well,
like,
that's just not... So let's talk
about
that. Not
beating them isn't really an option, you know?
But let's talk about that,
All right, so you assume Real Madrid beats everybody, and then... You assume Dortmund beats Apoel, and we beat Apoel, and then it kind of comes down to our head-to-head with Dortmund, and who loses to Real Madrid less bad, and who beats Apoel more good. And so...
Well put.
So losing or drawing to Apoel puts us in a hole where we're going to be down points versus Dortmund in the group. And so... Winning this game is pretty crucial to our hopes for advancing out of the pot.
Well, I think this
unless we can take something from Dortmund away or Real Madrid anywhere.
I mean, this and that's could a lot be to ask. Really important in terms of determining who gets out of this group. I mean, I think we all know Real's getting out of this group, but you know, if Madrid put a beating on Dortmund or just beat Dortmund, which isn't as far from a certainty, you know, and we can beat Apoel, especially if we can manage to beat Apoel comfortably, which I don't think is a certainty. You know, if those happen, like, our odds of getting out of this group, I think, are looking real nice, you know, after this week, if both of those things happen. I mean, you know, all we have to do then is beat Apoel a second time, and, you know, if Dortmund don't... I mean, Dortmund's in a real tough position if they lose to Real Madrid and we beat Apoel this week. So, I don't know. It's kind of strange that this round of fixtures is so important, but I think it really is for the entire group. So, we might put an incredibly strong team out there, but it is still a Cypriot team. Like, we can probably get away with a little bit more against them than we could against, you know, anyone else in our group.
We have our toughest Apoel match, and Dortmund has their easiest Madrid match. If these come out both in our favor, the next round is hopefully a lot easier.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do against Apoel other than we're going to see our best attackers out there. I would imagine you put Dembele in that match.
Given the way that he didn't play on the weekend, played against Barnsley, it seems like he's set up to rest for West Ham and start again against Apoel.
Yeah.
That's going to be tricky, but I think it's the right move. I mean, I think, you know, I wouldn't want to mess around too much with that game, given how important it is.
Yeah, it's a game we definitely shouldn't take for granted and think, oh, well, it's a Cypriot team, you know, we can rest players. Because the reality is we also have to beat West Ham if we want to stay in the hunt for, you know, the top four and have a good season in the Premier League. This is a game we can't be losing.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, it comes down to, is our squad good enough to manage two games a week for a long period of the season? And I fucking hope so.
So we're going to take one question because we've run a little bit much longer than I thought we would with the games we had to discuss today. So we're going to take one question from our friend Mohammed on Twitter. He's at Mo Square. Good follow, especially if you like French football for whatever reason. He wants us to relate our favorite Vincent Janssen memory. Now that Thick Vin has departed us for the greener fields of Turkey. Brian, what is your favorite memory of Vincent Janssen?
That one open play goal he scored.
Just the one?
Yep. I don't remember any others.
He scored two. One was in the cup, but he scored two.
Michael, what is your favorite Vincent Janssen memory?
There was that one game where he came on as a sub and like three times backed his thick bum into a player and drew a foul. Like, he basically, like, we were just holding a lead. I don't know where the game was, but I remember it very specifically. He didn't get any shots. He didn't get any goals. He didn't assist any shots. But every time he got the ball, he won the ball and drew a foul and killed time. And it was fantastic.
He was very good at a very specific thing. And nothing else. Ben, what is your favorite memory of Thick Vin?
So Brian kind of stole mine, but I happened to be at the Bournemouth game when he scored his only Premier League goal from open play. And it was late in the match, and he ended up scoring his own rebound after his first shot was saved. And the stadium just, like, White Hart Lane went nuts for him. And it was just really cool to see everybody, you know, just be on his side and be really happy to see him have that moment.
It was a little funny on TV. You could see how embarrassed he was by the reaction, which I felt made me feel a little worse for him, but it was nice.
Yeah, it's almost... But, like, it wasn't, like, sarcastic applause.
No, which, no, absolutely not.
It could have been. It was, like, it was genuine, like, excitement for him that he did it. And that was just a nice feeling. And I guess my other one is just in preseason, I remember we played a game with him and Harry Kane up top together, and he looked really good, and I was convinced that, like, oh, we're playing a 4-4-2 all season, because these two guys are going to score 20 goals apiece. I was mistaken.
I think if Vin hadn't been thrown into the deep end so early, that might have happened. I'm surprised you guys didn't mention this, but my favorite is the time he recorded that music video with Sir Mix-a-Lot, and it was really weird that none of you guys mentioned that. So that was my favorite moment with Vincent Janssen. So on that note, it's time to wrap it up. Michael, where can people find you on the internet?
I've been writing for 538. Hope to have something coming up pretty soon. Maybe seeing me at another place, 12, which I'll talk about more. And as always, most of my insights are posted to Tumblr at brettrainbow.tumblr.com. So I'll see you there.
Ben, where can people find you online?
I don't really know why we do this. I don't think I've gotten a single Twitter follow from this exercise.
There's lots of sex bots that listen to our podcast, Ben. Come on.
Oh, well, in that case, thank you, XX1235. You've been my favorite follower. You can find me at Gary Rupier on Twitter. It's a really good time.
Just Brian, do you want to direct people to your LinkedIn profile?
Do I? No, not particularly.
Okay. Any other places you want to direct them?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. It's at Brian with a Y underscore Ashlock.
You can find me on Twitter at skipjack0079, but I would recommend that you, instead of going there, you go to brettrainbow.tumblr.com. And on that note, for Ben, for Michael, for Brian, and of course, for Brett Rainbow, I am Skipjack. Come on, you Spurs.